Jamila, it's just going to be me and you, and everyone will be listening.
Okay.
Ready? This is Don't Ask Tig. I'm Tig Notaro. Here today is Jamila Jamil. You've seen her on The Good Place, and she has her own podcast, I Weigh. Hi, Jamila.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for coming today.
No, I'm a massive fan and big friend, so the pleasure and honor is all mine.
Oh, well, the feeling is mutual, and I think that there's going to be a lot of people thrilled that you're making an appearance on here. You very famously got your role on The Good Place with almost no acting experience. Would you say that takes a lot of confidence? What does that take?
I think it takes shamelessness. I think it takes my fundamental belief system of thinking that failure is cool. And I have had this belief system for like 15 years where I just think the only true failure that really exists is not trying at all. I think when you take a risk on something where success isn't guaranteed, I honestly look at it as a heroic act.
I like your style. And do you have any advice for people that might be wanting to take a big leap to do that sort of maybe their own version of what you've done?
Yeah, I think it's really important to just look at life as one giant fuck it bucket. You know, really, we get one shot at this, not to quote Eminem for too much of this podcast. but I think that it's really important to remember that fear should never navigate any of your decisions in life. It's really important that you don't let it do so. And it's really important that you don't allow the fear and projections of other people to navigate your decisions, because a lot of people are just fear-mongering us because either they're afraid for us or they have put too much importance upon the shame of failure, or they don't want to see you succeed at a risk you're taking, because then that will make them feel like shit about all the risks they didn't take in life. If you go out there and win, like so many people told me not to move to America. So, I mean, I'd say 99% of the people, when I was 28, I was at the top of my career in Britain, and I was just going to leave the whole thing behind and just start afresh in a much bigger country where no one knew who I was, where I was pushing 30, I was not a size zero, and I am South Asian, and there are, what, 5 South Asians in mainstream media at the moment in the United States?
Exactly, 5,
yeah.
Yes.
So I was told by everyone that I'll disappear without a trace. And I was like, at least I won't be haunted by truly 2 of my most hated words when put together in the English language, which is what if. Don't be haunted. Those words, the sting never dies off of regret.
Yeah.
And I only regret the things in life that I don't do.
Yes. And I try very much to live my life similarly. And I've always said, when people ask if I have regrets, or because I do fully believe that every step has led me exactly here, and I'm more than happy to be exactly where I am in life. I did realize recently that I do have one regret, and it's I wish I had never smoked a cigarette in my life.
Oh, but I bet you looked so cool while you were smoking. Just kidding.
I have to say, I did look really cool. You know, it is crazy that is exactly the only reason people start smoking.
Yeah, because it tastes disgusting.
That's the only thing.
Tig, I got bullied at school for refusing to smoke. People bullied me at school. So that's how intense we were in the 90s about smoking. Yeah. It was just like, well, you're never going to be Kate Moss.
Oh my gosh, it was even more so in the 80s. Anyway, I really... Yeah. Now, this episode is going to be our first episode in the new year. And are you somebody that does resolutions or anything like that, or do you?
Yeah, but my resolution is always the same, to continue to get better at the word no. You know, just to use the word no more times this year than I used it last year. I don't believe in new year, new you. I believe in new year, happier you, more honest you, real you, you know.
And well, I think it sounds like you do a lot of no's and yeses based on what you were just talking about before. You have to say yes to a lot of things, and you're also saying you got to say no to a lot of things.
But also you have to say a lot more no's, I believe, in life to have the opportunity to say yes to the right things. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to turn down the fear mongering of my team, where it's like, if you miss this opportunity, and I'm like, I just don't think it's going to be very fun or interesting for me. Or I say no to toxic people because they drown my fucking mind in toxicity and in all of their bullshit. And then I don't have the clarity of mind to make good, intuitive decisions. Right. And I wasn't always like this. I think I became like this at 19, and I've just never looked back.
What changed at 19? Because it seems like you have such crazy clarity.
I was hit by a car into another car and broke my back. And I just think everyone should be hit by a car into another car as a teenager.
Listen, okay, as a teenager, I'll tell you something.
Yeah.
One time I was sitting at a red light, and there was this woman that was 9,000 years old in next to me. And I happened to be looking at her when I saw her get rear-ended, and I saw her poor little old head slam into the steering wheel. And I thought, she was probably days or weeks away from getting out of this lifetime. What on earth did she need that for?
No, that's totally inappropriate. Yeah, no, I think when you can bounce back, and obviously I'm being very flippant and tongue-in-cheek here, I'm not being literal to anyone who is on Twitter, who's listening to this right now. what it did is it woke me up. I was 17 when I got hit, but then I was stoned on morphine for like a year and a half. And it wasn't until I was kind of almost 19, starting to reemerge. And I had this kind of existential awakening about how I was going to live my life. And that I was suddenly so horrifyingly aware, in a way that you never get to be that young, or so rarely get to be that young, of how easily life can just be taken away from you, how fast everything can be taken away from you suddenly.
It slips away.
And this year, I think, was a huge example of that for everyone, of like, Christ, the whole world stopped turning, and everyone lost all of the things that we had become so complacent about just having access to. And so I felt way less shell-shocked by 2020 than I think a lot of my peers, because it's kind of happened to me just in my own personal space before.
Yes.
And so, you know, and so I think after that, I left with what I hope other people leave last year with, which is we just don't know how much time we have. Like, run at what you want. Run at happiness. Like, get off the fucking treadmill and the rat race of life, and actually do what you're going to look back on with joy. Because I think a lot of people looked back on their lives last year with regret of what was quote unquote normal. Was that good for me? Was I happy? Did I spend enough time with my friends and family who I now desperately miss? What did I do it all for? I think that there's a lot of existential crisis that came out of 2020, and I hope that people channel it into a positive direction this year. We're in a new year. This is a fresh fucking start. And let's throw everything at our mental health. Every bit of money you were going to spend on cellulite removal cream, which doesn't work. Anti-aging cream doesn't work, and so offensive.
Beg to differ. I use all of those creams, and they have really made a difference in my cellulite and my anti-aging. So what you're looking at right now, it's all thanks to those creams, all of my beauty creams. If you want to know about my beauty regimen, I am here to discuss it.
Great. Well, aside from Tig,
that's where we differ.
I
say throw all of your money at beauty creams. Okay.
Okay. Well, controversially, I disagree. And I think you should spend all that money, if you have it, on therapy. Honestly, therapy and good times and
look,
a vibrator.
I have spent a lot of money on therapy since I was about 17 years old. And I just had to finally make that switch to beauty creams.
And it worked. Look at how successful you are.
Look at me. I will be 50 in March, and I do not look anything
but my age. Barely pubescent. Barely.
Now, Jamila, The Good Place taught a lot of people about ethics.
Yeah.
And do you feel like you learned more about how to be a good person on that show, or did you just... Have you just been nailing it since you were 19?
No,
I'll never nail it.
I'll never nail being a good person, because I'll always be untangling my own like trauma, internalized bullshit, internalized misogyny, internalized bitterness. Like, perfection is death. You know, there's nothing further to learn once you get there. And so, no, of course I don't think I ever have been or ever will be. I always refer to myself as a feminist in progress, because I believe that we are always in progress and the world is always updating. And if we're not going to be open to that, then truly what's the fucking point of life?
I have always felt very thankful for my mother would tell me, if anyone has a problem with me or with what I want to do, tell them to go to hell.
Mm-hmm.
And I have carried that
belief
vibe
system
with me.
Yeah.
Belief system and vibe. And people are always like, why are you, how come, what, you know, looking at me with confusion with moments in life that should have maybe gotten a different reaction from me. And I'm always like, look, I was raised by somebody that told me to tell everyone to go to hell. And it's something that I'm forever grateful for.
100%. And, you know, for me, it's not possible. So why try to please or be approved of or be believed or understood by anyone when at the end of the day, even if you live your life so perfectly, and I know so many women who do, people mm-hmm. will still find fault with you. And if anything, look at like Taylor Swift or even, you know, I mean, co-stars I've had, like when they live this perfect existence, people say that they find them annoying. Because they're too mm-hmm. good. They're too, like, too much of a good girl, a goody two shoes, too much of a perfectionist. Right. It's grating, you know? So you can't win as a woman. So why fucking try? I'm just not playing the game anymore.
Look, I like that you think Taylor Swift is perfect, because we are once again aligned,
yeah.
me and you. All right. Well, we have a lot of people that are waiting to learn a lot from you. And we have some. We have some questions to get into from our listeners. Are you ready?
Oh, so ready.
All right. The first question comes from Grace. Grace asks, I have a nemesis. We work in the same field. She overcharges and underpays, and she threatens and spies on her employees. Most of the time, I never think about her and just on my own life. But sometimes I fantasize about bringing her down. Should I be the bigger person and just move on, or should I destroy her?
Destroy her. I don't believe in being the bigger person. I believe in being the smaller person. I honestly think that my health suffered tremendously from my obsession with trying to rise above. I realized that rising above is just an abusive tactic taught to us by people who want to be able to make us eat shit and then feel somehow good about ourselves and smug for just swallowing it. And so I fundamentally disagree. Report her to HR, take her down. I'm a Pathan, which means that I come from a part of the like the mountains where are like the one of the most fundamental definitive traits of my tribe is that we live for revenge. And so get it out of your system. Don't swallow it. It'll turn into some sort of terrible autoimmune disease otherwise.
Like, okay, I am on your side. Call HR. Deal with this.
Yeah.
What about our industry where there isn't an HR? What if somebody's working in a world where there is no HR? And
I think there are HRs now in our industry. Like, I just got a very, very powerful man fired from a huge network that, for legal reasons, I can't talk about. But I found him to be very, very toxic and abusive and disturbing, and you know, reported him. So I'm sure I've now like risked my relationship with that company going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not an easy process, but I refuse to just tolerate bad behavior because it reminds me of school. It reminds me of all the shit that I ate at school from other people because I thought I was supposed to. But what are you asking as in like between actors?
Well, I'm just thinking, oh yeah, all of that. I mean, I've certainly spoken up about people and risked my safety, whatever that is, in my career to speak out about people or on topics. But I'm just, there are people out there that are very powerful, that are very much in control of a lot. And then you have people that are scared to speak up or protect themselves.
Totally. And look, I have the upper hand, not only because now I am fairly powerful, no, not that powerful, but still I also don't care if I lose my job. I feel as though I'm ready for any kind of twist and turn in life, and I don't ever put the importance of my happiness in any single thing outside of myself, be that career, be that a love, be that anything, thinness,
where do you come from? Nobody speaks like this.
I come from so much trauma, Tig, like such a terrible first 26 years that have just kind of morphed me into the Terminator, where I just keep coming back now. I personally just, I am my own fucking HR as far as I'm concerned.
I just love hearing that. I think it's, I feel very similarly. And like I said, I've acted very similarly. And I think that it's good to, for me and others to hear that, because it's tricky when somebody has an upper hand and you feel
powerless
and mistreated beyond comprehension. Yeah. And I remember when I did my TV show, exposing the producer on the TV show for sexual assault and harassment, people were telling me I would never work again. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying, then that is how it goes. But I know that what I'm doing is true. And so that is where my power comes from, is that I have gotten truth from victims. And that is where I stand and feel powerful moving forward with this. Yeah. And if my career goes away that easily, then I was never firmly planted here in the first place.
That's amazing. So, that's an amazing sentence. It feels as though more often than not, you do what the fuck you want. And I think that that's really important for people to see. And I despair of all of the, and it is predominantly women, but also a lot of men, who make us feel weird for doing so. Because what we're doing isn't actually weird. It might feel
the other stuff new. Is the weird stuff.
The other stuff is weird. It's insincere. It's dishonest. It is, there is a dishonesty in tolerating bad behavior because you know it's bad. You know it hurts. And then you are smiling and kind of, you know, grinning and bearing it. That's a dishonest, unintegral thing to do. And please understand that that comes from no place of, I'm not judging your dishonesty. I understand that you may be in a situation where you can't get out, or you rely on that job, or you have to feed dependents. I get that. I'm just saying that let's not treat the people who are looking for liberation at all costs as the odd ones out. Let's look to them as kind of as reassurance that maybe it'll be okay if I also say no to this like oppressive situation. Do you know what I mean?
I do. And I just love you more and more. I was going to say, I hope that helps, but I feel like that will for sure help anybody and everybody listening. We are going to come back after the break with more questions.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.
I just feel like we are surrounded in this world by bullshit.
So how can you know what's real and what's not? Science versus. That's how. We answer questions like, does anti-aging skincare actually work? And what is your true personality type? And to answer these questions, we don't use opinions. We dive into the scientific studies, talk to the experts, and put it in a podcast that I know you are gonna love. Listen to Science Versus on Spotify.
Jamila, this next question is what I call a hey boy. It's the messy ones, you know?
Yeah.
Hey boy. Hey boy. All right, Trish writes, my boyfriend's a bad kisser. Everything else in the relationship is golden. Do I even bring this up? It's truly not a big deal for me, but I can't help but wonder if there's a solution. First of all, can you imagine after everything you've said that you just, your answer to this is...
Just
suck it up.
Be grateful that you have the love of a man in this world. Tell him. I've told people before that I don't like the way that they kiss, and I think it's really important.
I bet that turns them on.
No, it's honestly like it's a choice, isn't it, right? It's like you might not find me a good kisser. Like we might just like have different kissing techniques. And so I've said before to someone on a first date during the kiss, I was like, I'm sorry, but I didn't enjoy that kiss. And I would like to enjoy the kisses more because I really enjoy you. And this is how I enjoy kissing. If you don't enjoy kissing the same, then we probably shouldn't do this. I'm not going to tell you that you have to kiss like this in your life. But if you want to kiss me, then that's what I'm going to need. And feel free to tell me what you would need. And it was awkward as but then he rose to the challenge and I was very, very impressed. And then he became a very good kisser almost instantly. So I say, have the conversation, be kind, be respectful of someone's pride.
Yeah.
And just make sure that they know that, you know, it's their choice. Would you, if you would like to keep kissing me, you would just need to meet these requirements.
And I don't know that I fully believe that Trish thinks it's not a big deal. And so I'm a firm believer in the tip of the iceberg theory. And so if it even, just that it, if it even surfaces,
yeah,
there's a whole triangle behind that tip, you know? And so I think that for you to write in having an issue with this, Trish, I think you do have a problem with it. And so I do echo what Jamila is saying in that you should say something, but definitely be gentle about it because
it's tricky.
Also maybe open up a conversation about maybe what you could maybe do differently or better. I end a lot of these questions with let us know how you're doing, give us an update, and of course I mean it, but I really mean it, Trish.
Yeah.
Let us know how this conversation went, because...
I always refer to these sort of things as a shitmas test, you know? I think it's really important, the good old shitmas test. How's it going to go?
All right. Well, keep us updated. And Jamila, do you consider yourself a good roommate?
Yes. Excellent. If I dare say so myself.
Yeah.
I am good. Why? Are we moving in? Are you inviting me to move in?
I was going to see if you would like to live with me, Stephanie, our 4.5-year-old twins, my father-in-law who lives with us, and a cat and 2 new kittens.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Okay. Well, Stephanie will be thrilled because she is a huge fan of yours.
Oh, that's very
kind. A huge fan.
Very kind.
What makes you a good roommate? It pertains to our next question.
Okay. I've had very, very, very bad roommates before, and I remember how oppressive and horrific that felt. There is something very specific about living, about having someone in your personal living space who doesn't meet your needs or make you feel safe, or like who just isn't considerate. And I think that traumatized me so early on. My first ever roommate used to get like high and move all of my furniture onto the roof of our house, and who used to piss out of our window that was on a pedestrian street, on the second floor of a pedestrian street, you know. So I lived with this maniac who would, you know, smoke crack until 7 a.m. with all of his friends. And I had a job that was on live television early. And so I think I became obsessed with never being spoken about like that roommate. And so I'm very considerate. I'm very careful of other people's feelings. I love giving space, and I like cooking for people and buying them food.
I think you should move in. I'm going to talk to Stephanie about this. I'm very excited. I'm asking because Katie asks, I live with a 40-something dude, and he laughs like a hyena and sneezes so loud. I feel bad telling him to shut it down because the laugh is obviously joyful, and I don't know if he can control his sneeze volume. I'm considering moving out. Please advise. Well, first of all, Katie, you have written into somebody who sneezes louder than probably your roommate, and I have to explain to people... Mm-hmm. If I tried to suppress it, my brains would come out of my ears and I don't even know what I would do. It's not possible. I cannot suppress my sneeze.
I see your bad sneeze, and I raise you the fact that I get no warning before my sneeze. Zero. I don't know what is. I don't know what's wrong with my nervous system. So I sneeze massively and out of nowhere, so suddenly that I then scare myself. So I sneeze and then I scream, which is the absolute worst. I've like, it's like the Bowser level of bad sneezes. Also, how much is
do you scare yourself?
Sneezing? Yeah, no, I literally startle myself and then scream. So it's
that
just like,
is
that's what it sounds like.
Katie would have no patience for you. And I feel like you're probably not crazy about this guy on other levels, because to start out by saying I live with a 40-something dude, I used to live with four guys in a house when we were all just touring stand-ups, and that was our crash pad in Venice. And I wouldn't call any of them 40-something or 30-something dudes. I was close to them, and I had relationships with each of them. They irritated me as I irritated them in all of our different ways. But it sounds like you don't really like this guy, maybe.
There were no redeeming qualities at all in the letter. None.
Yeah. And I think I can, I mean, yeah, if you don't like someone, then their joyful, annoying laugh is not going to be okay. And their sneeze, I mean, there's no way around it. Whereas if you cared about somebody, you might tease them about their laugh, or you might, there might just be more of a dialogue around the sneezing or the laughing.
Also, like, your home is your haven. And so it sounds like you need to get out as soon as possible. I know we've been in lockdown for over a year, almost a year. But I would say that it is imperative to your mental stability that your house and your home is a place of peace, tranquility, and safety. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
No one needs to be annoyed in their own house. I'm annoyed enough being out in the world. I need to come home and finally get a rest from being so annoyed all the time.
And as much as I loved my four roommate guys in that house, I remember going to do laundry, and I reached up to take the bottle of bleach off of the washer and dryer, and somebody hadn't put the cap on top of the bleach bottle.
Oh, no.
And it went all over me and ruined a shirt and jeans that I loved. And I kid you not, I put the cap on the bleach and I walked right into my bedroom and I started looking for apartments to live by myself. And that was the end of that for me. I was Googling 2 minutes later because I just thought, I cannot complain about this. I cannot bring this to anyone's attention. It is time to move out.
100%. So, are you a clean person or a messy person?
I'm a clean person.
I am horrendously messy, but I keep all of my mess only to my own space, sort of like a raccoon, you know, just
so interesting that you're a messy
secretive
person.
Why?
Well, I have to say, the secret's kind of out because I can see behind you and it looks a little disorganized on those shelves.
Well, this is my boyfriend's studio, to be fair. He's also a messy person. And we similarly keep our mess only to our bedroom. So the rest of our house is fairly neat, but our bedroom is just, I mean, we would win some sort of student award for the floor drobe. You know, there's something very comforting about finding someone who not only judges you, but thrives similarly to you in our own like disorganized childlike chaos. And yeah, I live a clear enough life in my head. I need some chaos and it's in my bedroom.
Well, that's the thing is you have such razor sharp precision with everything you're thinking and saying. And then it's just hilarious to think that you
are a pig in shit.
But yes. So Katie,
yeah, get out.
Move out of there. Go start your Google search for your own apartment or find...
Right now. Right this second.
Yeah, right now. Right now. All right, Jamila, here's our last listener question.
Okay.
It comes from Charity. Over the last few years, I have had major health problems. I'm 39 and sometimes now need a cane. I have a gigantic scar running vertically down my torso. I'm single and terrified to attempt to date. I am proud of what I've overcome, but do you have any advice about getting over my intense fear of being rejected because of my health or my scars? Well, Charity, if you're at all familiar with me, you might know that I've had some health issues and I have my share of scars. And I completely feel you on this because I remember even before I had scars, when I started to learn that I had different illnesses, I was so scared to share that information because I was scared I would lose work. I was scared, frankly, I was scared I was going to die. And then living through everything, I then had fear that I was going to be unattractive with scars. I didn't know, I would think, oh, how am I going to share this when somebody sees my body? And you know, oddly, the people that I was attracting found scars cool and sexy, including Stephanie. Scars just represent healing. And I would slowly start to get yourself out there. If you're asking this question, then it sounds like you're ready to check it out. And I just can't imagine somebody's going to go running from you.
No, and if they do, they're the wrong person. You know, I've had health problems since I was born. I have a condition called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. I've also struggled in my life with tumors and cancer. I have scars across my breasts that my current boyfriend told me he loves because they mean I'm still alive. And I have this condition I have is a lack of collagen in my body, which means that it impacts every single cell in my entire body, old and new. And it means that my heart doesn't work properly, my kidneys, my skin gets scarred so easily. I'm constantly in pain. I swell to twice my size all the time. I am not an easy person I'm not a completely easy person to be able to care for. And in a partner, I need someone who's willing to care for me. And I consider it my right to only date someone who's willing to take that on with love. And in other ways, I will be able to emotionally support them or maybe care for them. Another thing I want to say is that I think it's imperative that people do not enter enter any situation with shame, when you are going through something that is harder than most other people, you're a fucking hero, and go and get the love that you deserve from someone who is worthy of it. And someone who will not look after you or who finds that unattractive is weak, shallow, and fucking boring, I think.
Jamila.
Tig.
I can't get over you. I can't get over you.
Yeah, but you won't let me live with you now because I told you I'm messy. So
no,
what's the point?
I'm going to extend my house. You know, we've been talking about putting a guest house over the garage.
Perfect.
And I'll just shove you in there with just a bunch of dirty laundry and, you know, old spoons or whatever. I don't know what you enjoy having around you.
I can love an old fork. There are forks buried everywhere in my house. But it's like an Easter egg hunt. It's insane trying to find forks.
I just want to say, I'm sure that meant so much to Charity to hear, but I have to tell you, it meant so much for me to hear that from you.
We forget. We forget. The shame chips away at us. And because not enough of us talk about our health struggles because of the stigma and taboo about it, and the fact that we never see disability as something sexual or sexy or desirable. You know, look at fucking the crisis that is Hollywood. It is erasure. It is a lie that most of us are not walking around with some sort of chronic psoriasis or eczema or stomach problems or this, that, and the other, or maybe even a mental health problem. You know, we're all suffering and we're not talking about it. And then it makes us feel alone in our struggle, and then it makes us less likely to put ourselves out there. Put yourself out there. You never know who you're going to find. I never thought that a 26-year-old frontman, like Grammy-winning musician, was ever going to want to take someone on like me, who had so many extra caveats of things of patience that I would require. I never thought that he, who could have all these, like, you know, completely able-bodied Victoria's Secret models, would want someone like me. But over time, I like very quickly, I was determined to find my confidence that no, I fucking deserve this. And my the person I have built myself into, like, is reward enough for, you know, some of the patience that is required in order to live with me.
Now, have I mentioned how much I love you?
Oh, no, you haven't. But I think we should talk about it at length.
Well, I know you have to leave. You have to get on a flight, but
I could hear this. I could take the time, the flight.
Well, I just am so genuinely floored by you. And I'm so thankful for your brain and your mouth and your actions. And I just can't thank you enough for coming on here and sharing with me and everyone. And I really have had such a unique experience today. I'm just absorbing everything you're saying and feeling just inspired and powerful from you. And so thank you.
Thank you very much.
And I'll go tell Stephanie to, I was going to say clean up the garage, but I guess just leave it as
it is.
Don't bother. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you again. And do you have anything you'd like to plug before we leave?
My podcast, it's called I Weigh with Jamila Jamil. And, you know, if you can tolerate my bad language, probably don't listen to it with very small kids in the car, although they're secretly saying these things behind your back anyway. I hope that you join me on my ever extending learning journey, and we can all learn together. So that's it. But other than that, thanks.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Bye. That's what your heart is for.
Don't Ask Tig is hosted by me, Tig Notaro. It's produced by Thomas Ouellette, Mary Knopf, and Tracy Mumford. Our editor is Phyllis Fletcher, executive producer Lauren D., engineering and sound mixing by Eric Romani, digital production by Christina Lopez, talent booking by Marianne Ways, production assistance by Nancy Hsu. Our theme music is Friend in Tig by Edie Brickell and Kyle Crusham, and Listen to Your Heart by Edie Brickell. Special thanks to Hunter Seidman, Lily Kim, and Alex Schaffert. Our executive consultant is Dean Capello and Gobsmack Studios. You can always ask for advice at don'asktig.org. Just write in with your problem or send us a voice memo. You can also follow us on social media at Don't Ask Tig. Don't Ask Tig is a production of American Public Media. And as always, thanks, Dana. And I'll tell Becky. That's what you're
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.